We actually we have something in common, Holmes. Both of us are qualified to captain Scotland.
Is it?
The difference is one of us have actually done it. I was born in Scotland, but at least you've done what I couldn't do.
Right.
Okay. And captained and represented Scotland.
Welcome to The Biggest Man in Cricket with your host, David Brook.
Welcome, Omar Henry, to The Biggest Man in Cricket. An absolute legend to have you on. We're at Newlands today, a different venue.
This is an icon venue, mate. Beautiful.
How are you?
I can't complain, thank you. Lovely to be here.
Yeah.
Lovely to see you again.
It's been a while.
We had a stint together, at Newlands. So, great fun to be here.
You're a guest that I've actually, with my production guys, we spoke about. And it's something that I really wanted to have on the show. Because I think your story is one that is synonymous with cricket in South Africa. When your name gets mentioned, it's synonymous with the whole history of South African cricket, if you want to call it that. And you've been a real stalwart of South African cricket and an icon for so many. And it's just an honor to have you on. I mean, we're reaching those points where we're having guests like yourselves on. We slummed it a little by having Carl Verena on the test wicket keeper. But here we are today. And what have you been up to, Em?
Few things. I mean, I joined the veterans for a while.
So, I saw that, yes. We'll talk about that.
That was good fun.
Yeah.
In the meantime, basically, I think if I stop concerning myself with cricket, I will possibly collapse.
I don't think you'll have a choice. Someone will bring you back into the fold at some point. Eh?
So locally, I'm involved with a MPC, you know, just consulting, helping clubs, schools, just to grow the participants, you know, in underprivileged areas, underprivileged schools, helping clubs just to grow their numbers and their quality. So that keeps me busy basically on a day-to-day basis. And then lately, obviously, the position in Scotland. At the moment, it looks like if it's a full-time job, you know.
It sounds like it, yeah. Just tell us what that position is. We'll go into your Scotland career and all that, but tell us what that position is currently for yourself.
Well, it's basically just a presidential position.
Okay.
And, you know, in a way, it's the whole focus is on domestic cricket.
Okay.
And in an ambassadorial and ceremonial position, but also to improve the state of domestic cricket, which is so important for any country.
Absolutely.
You know? So there's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of positives. There's a lot of challenges. But the good thing is there's a lot of talent, you know? So I had 2 months now there, so we're just getting into the nitty-gritty of things. And
is the talent coming through the school system? Because they're domestic system there's no domestic structure as such as at the moment, right? What does it look like currently?
Well, to be quite honest with you, if I go back to when I was there and I played there in the 80s, late 80s and 90s, it was a very good club structure, in a way better than what I had in Lancashire, because there was another level above that. What they call district cricket.
Yeah.
So you represent your area, your club in your district. And if you're good enough and perform well enough in club cricket in your area, you get selected for your district. Out of your district competition, you then get selected for Scotland. But if your district win the Scottish leg of your district, you then go into the English leg of your district.
Okay.
So you play against the other district within England.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden you're exposed to good cricket.
Gotcha.
Even like minor county cricket.
Yeah.
That level. And that was a good stepping stone for me to identify then what cricketers we can invest in to play for Scotland.
Okay.
And that's how we got to our associate membership.
It's such a fascinating way of seeing things. We're obviously used to the professionalism of South African cricket, but in the associates, it's tough. We were talking to Stephen and Jimmy Cook about the son and brother, Ryan, who coaches the Netherlands, and talking about how difficult it is from an associate point of view, from a funding point of view, from a resource point of view, sponsor point of view, and just like being able to have your best players at all time who may be playing in South Africa or in county cricket to be able to pull that, it's really tough. You're in a rock and between a rock and a hard place.
Well, my message to the associate members now, I had a bit of involvement in Singapore, in Indonesia, and in Bermuda.
Mm.
It's a common denominator. However, if you're a full member, you're not short of challenges either.
Yeah. So full member status, just for those who don't know, is basically test cricket playing nations. Yeah.
So whether you're India, who's got a lot of money, there's still challenges in the game.
Absolutely.
Or England or Australia.
Mm.
If you've got lesser money than them, you've also got challenges. If you've got lesser money than a full member as an associate, you also got challenges.
Mm.
The point is that however little money you have or no money, if you have a passion and a love for the game, it is then how do you structure it to get the best out of those who play recreational cricket, because they now want to enjoy it.
Mm.
So you need to make it enjoyable for them so that they can then let their children come through there.
Mm.
And hopefully their children might be better than what they are and could excel to another level. So it is all about, for me, what I've learned is that there's possibly three things, whether you're on the field or off the field, right? It is your mindset, your knowledge, and your skill. If you can master those three elements in terms of whatever space, whether it's recreational, you still have to have a knowledge of the game.
Yeah.
You still have to have a skill of the game.
Mm.
You still need a mindset. You understand?
Mm.
And that needs to carry through to every other level.
Mm.
Unfortunately, in my experience, and I count myself in it myself, you sometimes lack in mindset, or you sometimes lack in skill, or you sometimes lack in knowledge. It is how do you internally improve on those three aspects?
Mm.
At the end of the day, to stay competitive.
Yeah.
And at the moment, I'm trying to get that message across and get that conversation and find out where are we, you know?
But one of the things that, you know, the Australia, the England, South Africa, India even, you know, the one thing that we all have going for ourselves is that is the schools game.
Absolutely.
And is the schools game that strong in, like, you're going to need government support. You're going to need government, you know, implementation of certain programs within schools. You're going to need, you know, is that culture there or is it football? I mean, it helps. It doesn't help you in a way that Scotland have just qualified for the Football World Cup. And apparently I read an article yesterday that they created a mini earthquake when they actually won the game. That's no joke.
I'll tell you something. When I was there in Scotland, I realized how big football is.
Yeah.
And it was massive.
Yeah.
And then when I got married, my club in Glasgow got me a flat overlooking Hampden Park.
Mm. Not too shabby.
And that was education in itself, right? So you can imagine this. A Saturday, the Scottish Cup final at Hampden Park.
Mm.
And my wife is taking me to a cricket game at my club, which is down the road. It's a yellow mini. It was around about this color, so you can't miss it, right? And on her way back, she dropped me on her way back, and the crowd was already going towards Hampden Park. And within 15 minutes, the barman at the club called me, and he says, "He showed me, come, hurry up." I was on the field, warming up, and there was a phone call. My wife is shattered. And also says, "I want to go home." "But you are home." "I want to go home to South Africa." I said, "What happened?" She was driving up the road.
Oh, my word.
And obviously they saw a woman in the car, mini, whatever. And they picked the car up and put it on the other side of the road. She couldn't see the funniness in it. Then the barman had to go.
You got to pick your poison. You either have that or you have the taxis in Cape Town. So decide what you want.
That was my wife's first sort of appearance in Scotland and what football meant.
Yeah.
And but we enjoyed it, and we were talking about it when they played that final, and we watched it together.
Yeah.
And she was so happy that Scotland, after so many years, qualify again. And look,
you can either see them as a competitor, or you can see them as sport in Scotland is a religion. And look at that and go, let's harness that passion, right?
Look, your point that you make about the government, doesn't matter where in the world you are, right? The government and the federation, whatever sport, there has to be a partnership.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
And sport, for any government, is an investment in many ways. You know, you can look at it from a financial, you can look at it the human capital, you can look at it whatever way you're going to look at it. That is almost a necessity.
Yeah.
It is how the government balance that with the various federations. In what sort of game are they going to put higher?
Yeah.
Is it rugby, cricket, hockey, soccer, whatever? It is their choice, right? I'm saying it is a necessity. You understand? And for me, the best example is Australia at the moment. How, I mean, they lost it a little bit in the rugby, but they're coming back, right? So you look at rugby, cricket, and they compete in soccer now as well. So if you go there and you look at facilities, you look at infrastructure, I mean, you look at the quality of the stadiums, you look at the attendance, you look at the passion and the love, you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
So there is a blueprint.
Yeah.
We, as Scotland or South Africa, we need to find our model, right? And this is what I'm saying to Scotland at the moment. You've got soccer, right? I know cricketers or soccer players who played both, right? Same as rugby.
Yeah.
So there need to be a partnership. There need to be an understanding. So in Scotland now, I'm trying to say to them, let's talk, to another sport.
Absolutely.
You know,
be share. Open, learn from
absolutely, yeah, share. Absolutely. Yeah. And see the soccer player that might not make it, but with that skill, he might make it in cricket.
Yeah.
You know, 100%, have that
there's been a lot of conversions.
Absolutely.
One of the Australian, I think it's, what's her name? Alyssa Healy. Yeah, she played football and,
You look at South Africa rugby players.
Yeah.
Scout.
Yeah, yeah. He's a great cricketer.
The latest one though. Is, what's this kid, Riley?
Yeah.
I mean, SM19, you know?
Absolutely.
It is there, there's example.
Yeah.
You know, Herschel Gibbs.
At school.
Herschel Gibbs is the best example.
Absolutely.
You know, Ashwell Prince could have played soccer.
Absolutely.
You know?
I think Ash believes he could still play.
Now, you won't talk Liverpool now anymore.
he's quiet about Liverpool.
It's a dead end now. He's very quiet. He doesn't send me messages anymore.
Something I've been interested in, and in all my research, it really didn't come up in terms of how did that Scotland gig even come up back in the day? I mean, it was completely far off from where you came from. How did it actually take place?
It was not planned, to be quite honest with you. I was in Lancashire in a small town called Michaelis.
Mm-hmm.
And
just playing club.
Yeah, even that gig was not planned either. A friend of mine, Howie Bergens, he pro'd for them. And he decided, no, pro cricket is not for him. He's going to study. So he then convinced the club he's got a mate in South Africa that he reckons he... The way he described me to them was, I thought, no, how can you do that to me, man?
Spinning all around, batting all around.
I am not a Tendulkar, neither am I a Brian Lara. I'm not a Garfield Sobers. You know, and I thought, but in any case, it was an opportunity. So I went for 3 months. And A, my parents didn't think that to play cricket for a living, that was a job. No, that's not a job. That's sport. Sport is recreational. So I had that mentality to deal with. And the little bit that I heard from the UK or Lancashire, it's wet, it's raining, the pitches are poor, et cetera, et cetera. And I went that 3 months, and I promise you, I had 2 weekends out of that 3 months where it was dry. The rest were wet. So I couldn't hit the ball off the square, neither could I bowl on it. The 2 weekends that I had to cash in, either with wickets or runs. Mm. And the committee wasn't too happy. I remember there was an old man. He was a legend at the club, and he walked with his walking stick.
Mm.
Lovely man. But he was honest. He says to me, "Omar, you're a fantastic athlete, but you can only play cricket when the sun is on your back." And I thought, shit, yeah, well, you're right, you know. And they couldn't give me a contract.
Mm.
The captain saw something else.
Mm.
And in February, in those days, we didn't have technology, right?
Mm.
So it was a telegram arriving at my house. And my mother, I wasn't at home, my mother got it. And she opened it up, obviously. Mm. And she wasn't too happy because it stated the captain wants me to come over.
Mm.
He pays my salary, pays all my expenses. He gives me accommodation. He gives me a car. That's better than a professional, you know. Yeah. But I have to work for him Monday to Friday, play Saturday, Sunday. And I thought, this is beyond me, you know. And in those days, the pound was what, 1.50 rand?
Mm.
So it was still a decent profit, you understand. So I took it. And he made it quite clear. He came to the end of his cricket career. He wants to flourish his business.
Mm.
But he wants to win the league, which the club hasn't won in 15 years. So he says, you have to be the catalyst.
Mm.
Fortunately for me, for some reason, came June, there's about 4 or 5 leagues in Manchester.
Mm.
In June, I had the most runs of every professional in the whole of Lancashire.
Yeah.
We were on top of the league. Cut a long story short, we won the league with a game to spare.
Awesome.
I've never seen people, community, cry, laugh, and celebrate.
Mm.
I woke up the next day and I saw just people lying there. I couldn't believe it. I thought,
oh, no. You were the only sober one then.
I was the only sober one. And I look at this and I thought, is this what it meant to them?
Yeah.
I got a real picture of what it meant to them, right?
Yeah.
And that hit me, how important it was.
Mm.
What I didn't know was this guy from Scotland come to do business in Manchester on a monthly basis.
Mm.
So he's watched and got all my stats and performances, whatever. He phoned the club just 2 weeks before we won the league.
Mm.
He obviously understood how the league worked and whatever. Saw that there were 2 weeks where they still play cricket in Scotland and we finished. So he spoke to our secretary, who told him that I'm staying for another 2 weeks after our season before I leave. So he knew when I left, when I'm going to leave South Africa, I'm in England.
Mm.
So he got my number, phoned me up. And I listened to this guy, but I couldn't understand what he was saying. That accent was just, I said, oh, speak slowly, please, you know. I mean, at that time, my English wasn't that good either because it was my first full season. And being an Afrikaans boy from Stellenbosch, you know, Afrikaans was proper, you know. So my English was yes and no at those days. So in any case, I spoke to him. I didn't know cricket was played in Scotland, so therefore that curiosity sort of made me go up 2 weekends. 1 weekend rained out.
Surprise, surprise.
Hardly played. Second weekend rained out. I batted. And on that basis, they signed me.
Oh.
Signed me for 3 years.
Mm.
And you don't get a 3-year contract. It's
incredible,
in any
incredible, yeah.
So that was a plus. So I went up there. What attracted me then was, besides the contract, was in Glasgow, the people in Lancashire told me, why do you go? It's worse than Lancashire. It rains every day in like Glasgow, and it's an industrial city.
Yeah.
You know, they're making ships and whatever the case is.
Yeah.
I got all kinds.
Yeah.
But when I arrived at the club, the ground was in an estate. I mean, I'm surrounded with 2 golf courses.
Yeah.
And this wonderful estate, you can go and walk and whatever. This is brilliant, you know. So those were the things that attracted me.
Yeah. Was it Scotland at that time? weren't an associate nation yet. They were part. They were a county.
County, playing
in the England. Yes.
So, how they explained it to me was that if you, as an overseas pro, if you perform well, Scotland is allowed one overseas professional to play for them against the counties in the NatWest and Benson and Eders. So there was an Australian playing. And fortunately for me, that form of Lancashire took me, I took that with me to Scotland. So by the end of my first season, they dropped this guy. And they picked me against Australia, right? And that was Kim Hughes' team, right? And I promise you, that was a Baptist that I will never forget. I mean,
you played that game in Scotland?
Yeah, that was my first confrontation with an Australian cricketer.
Give us some.
No, I can't give it to you. This is a public, so I can't. But I mean, that was an education, you know. But it was brilliant. A for me. And B for my teammates. Because what happened was that after that game, the president of the Scottish Cricket Union came to, he called me out of the dressing room. And he said, come and let's have a walk around the crown. And during that conversation, he says to me, the committee decided to offer you a 5-year contract. I said, but I've got a 3-year contract. I've done one.
Yeah.
So I've got 2 more years left. He says, no, don't worry. We sorted out with your chairman. You can stay at the club, but you work for us now.
Sure.
5 years. This is what you have to do. So what is that? He says, we don't want to play county cricket. We want to be an associate member.
Okay.
What? I haven't played for them yet against the counties, but in my mind, one professional, 10 amateurs against 11 professionals.
Yeah.
I mean, that is already a huge step, right? So at first I disagree. The longer we walked around, I thought, I realized this guy is not going to give in. He's adamant. They don't want to play down in England. They want to be in association. So my question was, what's the time frame? It says, as long as you make progress, you stay in the job, and we can see we're growing, we're happy. That's all right. That's not bad.
Well,
I can take that.
Yeah.
You know? And the rest is history, basically.
I mean, your whole career, you've never really played for, I mean, obviously the money's good in pound sterling. Back in the day, it was only 1.5, whatever, but you always played for a purpose. Whether it was in the province team or the Free State team, there was always a purpose to your career rather than, I'm playing here because somebody's giving me a gig and they're offering me $5,000 more or whatever it is, right?
Well, I was fortunate. I remember playing here, and that was possibly the blessing in disguise. When you have an ambition, right? All right, so the guy who planted the seed in my head was Basil D'Oliveira. When he got banned and he came out to coach, he came to my school. I was 15, 16. So he then said to my parents and to my cricket school master, he says, I saw a kid here now today, and he was prepared to take me to England. For 3 years in those days, you have to stay in England 3 consecutive years. Then you can qualify as a citizen through cricket and then play. So he was prepared to take me to Worcestershire from 15 for 3 years, stay with him and play cricket, right? My parents said no. But the seed was planted. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So basically, I only went to school to do what?
Get your matric
and play cricket. That's play it. Cricket, yeah. Done. I didn't go to school to do homework. No. No chance. Right? That was psychological.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So then I came here, and Eddie Barlow was here. And I had one stint with Eddie Barlow, also coming to my school, when he played here and he worked for SFW. They came to our school and fetched us in a bucky, or took us to Oda Libertas. And I'm not telling you a lie. So our Indonets at Oda Libertas was a wine cellar. I'm not telling you a lie. So you cannot pull. You cannot cut. You have to play straight. Otherwise, the place will be flooded with light. Right?
That's brilliant.
So you had to play straight.
Yeah.
That was a good education in itself. Absolutely, without knowing, without realizing.
Yeah.
So then I came here, he played, he was the captain.
Mm.
And I asked him, do you think, for me, it's a good thing to pursue? He says to me, yes. And I'll never forget. The old scoreboard was there, if you can remember.
I remember.
It was an old scoreboard, a big scoreboard. And we were standing there, right? And he says to me, you see that scoreboard? When you play cricket, you only play cricket for that scoreboard, nothing else.
Mm.
If that scoreboard tells you Omar Henry has taken wickets and Omar Henry scored runs, the money will flow.
Like
not that. The other way around.
It's a byproduct of that.
Not there. That stuck.
Mm.
So that was always a purpose.
Mm.
You understand?
Mm.
And it was those little things that at the end of the day contribute to your mindset, how it shapes you, how you think. And obviously the learning capacity, the willingness to learn and to improve.
That, you know, Poland and Province as part of your career was kind of a given, seeing that you were from this region, but you went to Free State. You were playing for Free State while you were, you know, in the summer here and then Scotland in the summer there, right? Yeah. How did that come about?
In Palace.
Yeah.
You know those days
when
the B Province is made up there. That was a masterstroke from Bacher, right? To explore, what sits underneath, right? And do you know the players that came out of that?
Mm.
I'll give you some names.
Please.
Poucher.
Wow.
Cronier.
Mm.
Alan Tonal.
Mm.
Corey Fanser. Myself.
Mm.
And various others. Came out of that.
They picked the best of the
B section.
Mm.
And then eventually, if your province grow, right, in terms of increasing the amount of talent, and you win the B section, you get then promoted. And that's how we became from 6 to 7 to 8 to 9 to 10 to 11 provinces, you know?
It, like, just when you talk about that and the talent that come through, is it, and we don't need to go into the in-depth discussion of the current domestic structure, which we all have an opinion on, but is there still something in a modern day Impalas where the best of the rest play? I know Cricket South Africa, and I really like this, was they had the SA under-19 team playing the last, I don't know why it hasn't happened this season, but they played in the T20 Challenge because they might not have been playing. But is there a modern day Impala's best of the rest playing in the first division of domestic cricket? Is there a place for that in 2025?
I think you have to look at the contribution of the Impala's, right? And then you've got to say, right, can this model work in the modern game?
Yeah.
Right? And are there other models that one can introduce? It never stops.
Mm.
We all agree that the game evolves at the top.
Yeah.
So if the game evolves at a rapid pace at the top and the bottom don't narrow that gap, you're going to get caught.
Yeah.
We caught now,
right?
So I'm saying the leadership has to always be in control and sort of understand the trends of where the game is going and how we should then accommodate.
Mm.
Now, for me, there's two things. The cricket career of a professional is that short, right? You've got possibly another 20 years after you play cricket.
Yeah.
What happens after that?
Mm.
So if you breed a cricketer, you have to make sure that they can either go into another space, an environment, either business or whatever, or education or whatever the case is, but they skilled in that regard, or they can go into cricket and serve the game even further.
Mm.
But the organization needs to ensure that whoever they identify and employ, there's a succession plan for them at the end of the day.
Mm.
You cannot leave them and throw them out once they've served the game for 10 years or whatever the case.
Yeah.
So that's the responsibility of the organization and to a certain extent the government. That is not clear to me at the moment.
Mm.
So that's one thing that needs to be addressed. The other one is the models of how can you keep that gap narrowed so that there's a conveyor belt of products, quality products coming through, but they need tested.
Yeah.
We all need tested,
Yeah.
you know?
Mm.
So at the moment, we haven't got that flow right yet, which means there is space for that discussion. I can tell you now, in Scotland, that is where we are, is to see how that flow is, you know? And if that flow is flawed, it will challenge you at the end of the day.
If there's a barrier in place.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I love where our Proteus team is at the moment, but if you look at our spinners, for example, and I mean, you must be very excited seeing three spinners playing in test matches and winning test matches. They're not youngsters. You know, these are guys that are late 20s or early 30s that have been around. Simon Harmer's, you know, played hundreds of, he's got 1,000 first-class wickets, hundreds of first-class games. But they've reached their peak at a later stage than a young spinner maybe coming through. So are we, you know, with, you know, domestic cricket, maybe SA20, the link there, there's a lot of opportunities for youngsters to come through a lot quicker. But the quality of cricket has to be there, right?
No, absolutely. I mean, you just look at the spinners. All three of them has done the hard yards.
Yeah.
They have played hundreds of domestic first-class cricket.
Yeah.
You know, and they produced.
Yeah.
And they improved. Right? So that's from a spinner's point of view. We sit also with a conveyor belt of quicks and variation of quicks. You know, left armers, right armers, swing, seam, pace, whatever. Excellent. Right? But our batting, if you look at what we had, you know, your Callis, your Smiths, your Kirstens, your Gibbs, your Amlas, your whatever, you know, the top guys. I mean, Shukri admits, I haven't got a team of superstars, but he refers to the batter more than what he refers to the bowlers.
Yeah.
Right? He might not say it, but that's a fact. So
he also needs spinners. I mean, look at Sen Muttasamy. He needs spinners that can bat.
Correct. So that comes into the all-rounder mold.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? And that helps him at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
They win games for him.
Yeah.
But we need that quality of batters, which we were famous of. Your Graham Pollocks, your Barry Richards, you name them. The list is long enough.
Yeah.
So there's a question to be asked. Why is it that we're not producing that? You know? Or is there a cycle? I don't know. But the conversation needs to take place.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether that conversation does take place. You understand? So there's a lot for us, and not just us, but every cricketing nation, because we are challenged. Three formats. I wish you good luck to manage three formats successfully.
Yeah.
I tell you, you need a brain trust that is so good and complement one another, right? To plan and manage a conveyor belt of talent and direct them in the right direction in terms of the three formats or all three formats, whatever. But to maintain a standard, let's say top three or top five in every format.
Very difficult.
You need a team that can really plan that successfully.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what the modern game demands at the moment. Australia for me stands out. I mean, what happened the other day, it tells you that these guys are not, they are ahead of the game.
Yeah.
They are not afraid of the game,
yeah.
You know? And they know how to find solutions. And that is key for me.
Yeah. I think, you know, you going into a role now that's going to shape the future of Scotland cricket, but we've got the 2027 50 over World Cup here, and the 2030 World Cup, is it T20 World Cup or 50 over World Cup in England and Scotland.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is there's Test cricket, which is the purest, and there's T20 cricket, which is the money spinner and the entertainment factor, the young people coming into the game. So the 50 over cricket needs to find its identity. Will we get to a stage, and we were talking about it just before, like, will we get to a stage where bilateral 50 over cricket will only take place really in the lead up to a 50 over World Cup? Because I still believe there's a significance for the 50 over World Cup. The players love it. There's historical, you know, but how much 50 over cricket in 2029 will actually be played in the 3 years leading up to the World Cup, a 50 over World Cup?
Look, again, that conversation needs to take place at the ICC.
Yeah.
And I think they're trying now to get ex-cricketers to come in and talk about it and come with proposals, et cetera, right? Yeah. That's a good thing. There's a balance between the guy who organizes marketing and the money.
Yeah, yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And then there's a string,
yeah.
a list
yeah.
of countries
yeah.
that's depending on that money.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
So that's the one.
Mm.
And then it is how do you bring these different models of cricket in
mm.
so that that income can serve every country
mm.
to be able to grow. And what is the country itself doing
yeah.
to get the third stream?
Mm.
What's it? So there's a lot of education needs to be done. There's a lot of knowledge that needs to be shared from a developed country to an underdeveloped country.
Mm.
You understand? Whether that is taking place, I don't know.
Mm.
Right? So I agree with you that that model needs to be unpacked,
mm.
the pros and cons. As far as income is concerned, mm. I think the ICC needs all three.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
to make some money. The one, T20s obviously, it's standing out.
Yeah, and that's where the TV.
Absolutely.
There's only one TV. There's only one TV money pot.
Correct.
Yeah.
So you now then had to say, right, now how can we piggyback
mm.
the other two formats and make sure that we can balance it nicely
yeah.
In a 12-month calendar
mm.
and not sort of neglecting the one.
Mm.
Because you talk to even current cricketers today.
Mm.
They want to play more test cricket,
yeah.
but it is not sustainable.
Yeah.
So how do you package that?
Mm.
You understand? Because mm. that is where you are really tested mentally.
Mm.
There's a different mental test in a T20, right?
100%, yeah.
But over 5 days,
mm.
my goodness.
Just some of the stories, obviously back in your day, there wasn't social media and people around with cameras recording everything in the change room. Just some cool stories of like, you obviously played against the Mean Machine back in the day, the strong Western Province side. You played with some legends at Free State. Just give us some cool stories from back in the day.
I remember Newlands. You come here, and Newlands wasn't as big. It was congested. Mm. People were sitting on top of you.
Yeah.
So you had characters, you know. And I remember I came here with Free State.
Mm.
But by then I knew what the people were like.
Mm.
And I was fielding on the left. If I looking now with the old scoreboard used to be,
old
I was fielding there. on the left there. Mm. There was a little
the planes.
That's right.
Huts. Yeah.
So I was fielding there, and they were sitting on the grass, and I was walking backwards towards them, right. And the guy was shouting my name, and I didn't look. Third time again. And then the fourth time I looked around, and he says, just tell me, man, why does the birds in Free State fly upside down? What shit? What are you talking about? So I said, I don't know. He says, gee, you must be stupid, man. The only reason why they fly upside down is fuck all to see.
That's brilliant. You can't beat the Newlands faithful.
The Newlands crowd, I tell you what, they're beauties, man. I mean, I remember playing the Mean Machine, yeah.
Mm.
And Ricey and Curry and Jennings.
Mm.
They couldn't take them,
mm.
you know. But the best one was also for Free State. Cronier wasn't the captain. Bertie was the captain. And Cronier came down here to what we call the colored section in those days. And it was humming.
Yeah.
So he went down about 3 overs. And apparently by the 3rd over, he was also standing with his back towards them. And he said, Cronier, how great did I know? So he turned around. Before he could say anything, I said, gee, you look like us. Look at your hair. He came up. Next over he comes up. He says, but I'm not going to go down there. Send Punk down there. His mates is giving me crap.
That's a great story. Who were some of your teammates in Visalfa Cronier, and who were some of your teammates at Free State at that time, in that era?
Oh, we had a fantastic team.
Mm.
You know, for a young team, I played the first year, and I looked at that team, and I thought, gee, this is it. But we couldn't win a 40 game.
Mm.
We couldn't win a 40 game. And it was almost a very conservative approach,
mm.
right? And then they made Hansi captain. And I remember he was sort of talking to everybody, the players, and asked, you know, what can we do to improve and whatever the case is. And then he came to me and he was discussing possible coaches and whatever.
Mm.
And we spoke about two coaches that could contribute to the potential quality of that team.
Mm.
And Bob Woomer's name came up and Eddie Barlow.
Mm.
But Bob Woomer was never going to come because of his connection with South Africa,
mm.
right? So he was always going to go with the South African team, which left Barlow.
Mm.
But Barlow wasn't coaching. He was farming somewhere here in Kulinov, whatever. So Cronier drove down. He drove down from Bloem
mm.
to go see Barlow personally. So he succeeded.
Mm.
And that was one of the things that contributed
mm.
to the entire change of that mm. entire team.
Mentality.
Everything.
Belief.
Everything. Yeah. Work ethic. Everything.
And you won the four-day competition when you were there?
We annihilated everybody.
Mm.
And Free State dominated South African cricket for about 5 to 10 years.
Mm.
And that was the quality of that team.
Mm.
You know, if you look at it in the team context,
mm.
the opposition will look at you and they'll try and see who's the weakest link, right? They couldn't find.
There was none.
I'll give you some. We played KZN in Bloem. And Jonty was playing. We ran him up. Jonty.
Yeah.
Right? He couldn't get a run out. We stole singles against them. Right? And we beat them.
Mm.
So he came. The game is finished. He came off the ground. Now, our dressing room was on the left. And the visitor's dressing room on the right. He came straight up our dressing room. Into our dressing room. Opens the door and he counted everyone, right? Now, him and Cronier are big buddies.
Mm.
So Cronier asked him, what are you doing? He says, I'm just counting whether you are 11 or not 15 because you weren't 11 out there. So that's
the biggest compliment that you can get. Huh?
That tells you.
Yeah.
You understand? So it's a team, I must say, every provincial team I played for, they had common denominators in terms of why they were successful.
Yeah.
And then there were other things that was unique to every province.
Yeah.
Whether it was Western Province or Boland or Free State. Province had a uniqueness. Boland had a uniqueness.
Mm.
It worked for them.
Mm.
And so did Free State.
It's a great point you make there because I'll go to the current domestic system and I cannot tell you any team that has its own identity. And that's... That for me means either there's too much change in domestic cricket every season, which there are. We spoke about it in the previous episode where it was, you know, 60% of the players are moving around every season kind of thing. So it speaks to that like lack of identity and the identity like the mean machine and that is something that brings fans to the ground. It's a connection that brings, which I know is lacking in domestic cricket. I mean, your son-in-law, some people might not know, your son-in-law is Rory Kleinfeld. He's married to your lovely daughter, Ray. He's obviously involved, and you spoke about, you know, the players retiring and getting back into cricket. He's now the coach of Western Province side. He's giving back. I mean, he was made to be a coach, Ross, right?
Well, I think just from his own family.
Mm.
I mean, that history goes back many, many moons.
Yeah.
Right. And that is not just from his father, but his even from his mother.
Mm.
You understand? So that history in itself says to you that it is in his blood, and that's why he still have a passion and a love for the game.
But it's a good thing that guys like that are wanting to. I mean, he had a nice job, a bowling coach job at North Ends, coming back to South African cricket and wanting to contribute to the next generation.
Well, that is so important. But on your point of professionals traveling around, right? I haven't got a problem with that, right? For me, what I saw then when I started to play, almost every province that was successful had 60-40, 70-30 80-20 local development players coming through their system.
Got you. Yeah.
Right? Where they produce international players, they produce quality, quality provincial players that contributed to the competitiveness and the standard of that province. They might not have played for South Africa. There's a list of them that really served the game very well domestically for 10 years and contributed to success, right? We don't have that today. You understand? My view is the conveyor belt throughout South African cricket, the numbers is lacking of potential quality. I want a conversation with every province in that regard. When I came here, we were 80-20, maybe 90-10, right? It gradually deteriorated to maybe 60-40, right? Free State was a 90-10. You understand? Local.
Yeah.
Boland, similar, 60-40, 70-30, right? So if I am in charge of cricket South Africa now, and I've got to give Western Province 20 million or 50 million to run cricket in the Western Cape, I'm going to say to you, what is non-negotiable, whatever you agree on, a 90-10 or an 80-20 or whatever, you have to produce. If you don't produce, I couldn't care whether you win or lose, but you have to produce.
Yeah.
For the sake of the game, if provinces are not producing cricketers, the game cannot go.
Yeah.
So you cannot have a mentality of just buying.
Yeah.
That is milking the game.
Yeah.
That is not serving the
game. Yeah. It's just this constant conveyor belt, but not necessarily, it's on a going nowhere conveyor belt.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You get some players, I mean, there's some young players that have played for already three provinces and they're 24 years old.
Correct.
I mean, back in the day, you would never see that.
So.
But it's just about one province offering 50 grand more than the other.
I mean, I didn't want to say that, right? But there is a mentality, and there is an argument for it as well, that your career is only that short.
Yeah.
So therefore, you have to pile in as much money as you can.
Mm.
However, is that the only part of this broader game? No, it is not. So where do you find this balance? Of making sure that the game is in a healthy state. Are you the last one to play the game? After you, there's still plenty.
100%, yeah.
So where are you? I cannot just come in and say, right, I want to make as much money as I can, regardless of where the game is going to be in 10 years' time. Hold on. The game is not about you. The game is bigger than all of us. And I'm not sure whether we convey this today to the talent that we identify.
Agreed. Yeah.
You know?
That message doesn't get across.
Correct. And for me, there's a lot more to educate kids. There's an enormous amount of talent, seriously, right? I would like to see, I'll give you a phenomenon. You take Rabada today, straight out of the under-19s, Markram, right? What's his name? The wicketkeeper who just came back now. Quinton de Kock. Straight out of the under-19s. That will always be the lesser percentage that comes straight through.
You're going to get that outliers, those superstars.
Absolutely. Hardly played any domestic cricket.
Yeah.
You can see them, right?
Yeah.
They're obvious.
Yeah.
The next lot, 5 years and more, right? We haven't mastered that art yet.
I looked at guys like Reza the other day, and I feel like Reza has been around for 25 years.
Ages.
But somehow he's only 32. You know?
Ages.
And he's already at the back end of his international career, you know? So it's an interesting...
So what I'm saying is, you know, that conversation needs to take place. Because that quality is what's going to make you competitive. It's going to get you more money into it. Businesses will queue to invest if that is successful. Not the ones that come straight out of the under-19s.
Yeah.
It is the next lot that comes up. Now, here it is. If you have got eight teams in Division One. Eight teams in Division One. That means that has got to be the best 88 players in the country, isn't it?
Mm. You would think, yeah. But is it?
The question it
yeah.
isn't.
Yeah.
So I'm saying continuously, and this is how I was brought up. I had no academy. The Newlands dressing room was my academy.
Mm.
You spend from 6 o'clock coming off the ground
yeah.
to 12 o'clock. Right? There was
some of those things you don't want to necessarily learn about, but they teach you something.
Well, you've got to pack your bag.
Yeah, yeah.
So it depends what you pack back in your bag to take home with you. It's your choice. You understand?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that for me was my academy.
Mm. Love it.
And I walked away with that. Mm. I promise you, it shaped me.
Mm.
Wherever I went, it shaped me.
Mm.
And I can only be grateful. Every dressing room I was in, where there was a successful team, leadership, and players that play the game in the right spirit,
mm.
that was for me my academy.
Holmes, it's been an absolute privilege to have you on, and I'm grateful that we've told a different side of your career. There's the side, obviously, you're an iconic player. You're the first non-white player to play for the Proteas, which was an incredible. You were part of that whole transition of South Africa coming back into play. But I'm glad we've been able to run through the side. I've listened to a lot of interviews with you over the years, and it's always been about that. And that is obviously the most important aspect of your career and the purpose of your career. But there's been so much more that we've been able to unpack today. So I'm grateful for you coming in here and telling us all these stories. We're reaching the end of our chat because, I mean, we could talk. We're at Newlands here. We can carry on till the tea break and have some tea and break for tea. But we do have to conclude with a section we have here called the Declaration. It's kind of quick-fire questions, some fun answers, and then I'll be able to say thank you very much. It's been an honor to have you on. So you ready for the quick-fire questions? Okay. A couple of themed ones as well. First question, your favorite Scottish food you enjoyed over there while you were there, or now even?
Fish and chips.
The greatest. Old school, in the newspaper.
In the newspaper, yeah. Out of the newspaper, with all the oil, everything.
I love it. And the health and safety came around and they ruined the whole experience, eh?
Well, I went back there and I still went to
still got it.
I still went to the fish and chips. Don't put it to me, put it in the paper.
Yeah.
That's it.
Legend. Love it.
They still do deep fried Mars bars as well.
Yeah, deep fried Mars bars. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Iron brew.
Yeah, iron brew. I just couldn't get used to when I was there. I just couldn't get used to that. Okay, the most underrated player you ever played with or against? Underrated.
Wow, there's a few, man.
Name them.
There's a few.
It doesn't have to be one.
I think Rudy Steyn.
Yeah. Good. No, top order batter.
Yeah. Western Province. Beanpole.
Who was that?
You know Beanpole? During. It was a seamer.
Yeah. First name?
John During.
Okay.
Quality bowler.
Yeah.
Good hands. Good bat as well.
Mm.
Never got, I reckon, the recognition, but look, the competition in those days was tough.
Yeah, cheapest.
It was tough to get through.
Yeah.
But he was and a gentleman as well.
Nice.
I was in some great battles with him against opposition. He bowled from the one end and I bowled.
Mm.
And it was a joy to bowl with him.
Nice.
So those two possibly springs to mind. Yeah.
Love it. Your favorite batsman to bowl to that you just had his number?
Oof. There were two guys.
Mm.
Can't remember the one. One was from Border and then Nosworthy was one as well.
Dave Nosworthy, yeah.
He was, I mean, I think he used to crap himself when I threw it out, you know. Okay. But it was all in good faith.
Yeah.
It was all good fun.
Dave Nosworthy, a great one. The best spin bowler in the world right now, according to you?
Depends on the formats.
Let's go to Test cricket.
Test cricket now must be Lyons. Mm. You know, I mean, his longevity. Mm. I mean, the story that I heard was he was a groundsman in Adelaide and learned his trade bowling in the nets to the players.
Mm, just because he was there.
And you look at where he is now.
Incredible. Yeah.
I mean, that is unbelievable, you know. So yeah, he's possibly standing out for me.
Nice. Your favorite non-cricket sports person that you admire, whether it's past or present?
Non-cricket, say soccer players.
Mm.
Then there's rugby players.
Mm.
Then there's golfers.
Mm.
I can tell you golfers is Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
And then if you give me a soccer player, that will be, well, there will be two, Ronaldo and Messi.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk about rugby, oh my goodness.
Mm.
I mean, it's got to be coming out of South Africa.
Mm.
And right now, this team is full of them.
Yeah.
you just have to look at, you know, the forwards.
Mm.
What is the hooker's name?
Malcolm Ox. He's just won the World Rugby Player.
He's a solid.
Yeah.
And then the guy next to him, Ox.
Ox, yeah.
You know, and then you look at the utility players, the fly-ups, you know.
Talent all around.
Man, it's they're full of them. So
yeah.
I can give you a list.
We can name the whole Springbok 15.
Absolutely.
Then the final question, Holmes. One player from your generation who would have been a star in the SA20 tournament? Who's a 10 million rand auction buy from your era?
Eddie Barlow.
Nice.
He was ahead of the game, 50 years ahead of the game.
Mm.
He hit you for a 6 over cover point. And third man.
Yeah.
that was beyond.
Yeah. Amazing.
And he was a bowler who swings it.
Yeah.
And he was a good fielder.
Mm.
He was a proper
full package.
Yeah.
10 million rand, easy.
Oh, easy. He missed out big time.
Yeah.
Well, he got a bit of packer, so he's happy with that, you know.
Omar Henry, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you. We might not be in Bootlegger coffee shop today. We're at Newlands Cricket Ground, a little bit of a better view, but I did bring some Bootlegger coffee along to say thank you very much for making time out here to come on to The Biggest Man in Cricket. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
My wife will enjoy that coffee, man. She's coffee crazy. So
lovely.
At least the few hours I spend here, I can make up with her.
Thank you.
Say here's a present for you.
And good luck with the Scottish gig. If you ever need a Scottish consultant, I have my passport ready, just let me know. I was a bit of a medium pacer back in the day, but dodgy knees, not going to contribute much, but I can contribute on the administrative side.
We won't need you on the part. We're going to try and sell you as a podcaster. Yeah, spread the word.
The Biggest Man in Cricket Podcasting in Scotland.
Spread the word. Yeah. Spread the word.
Love it.
But thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate it, and all the best with your programs.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sure.
Guys, well done.